Today, we are joined by our friends from the Department of Rehabilitation. We have Jake Johnson, Sue Pelbath, we have Peter Dawson, Laura Rasmussen, and Jay Harris, who are going to be giving us some updates and also going to be here to answer some of your questions. As a reminder, we are not able to get into personal cases at this time, but definitely reach out and we can put you into contact if you have any questions that are specific to you. All right. So, Jake, are you available? Are you here?
I certainly am, Sarah. I'm ready to go when you are.
Well, I'm ready to hear what you have to say. So Jake is the new Joe for today, everyone. So Jake, go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and give us your updates as well as how long you've been working with the department.
Sure. I'm happy to do all of those things, Sarah. Thank you very much. Those are pretty big shoes to fill, filling in for Joe. I'd like to pass along that Joe wishes he could have been here with you all today, but he's on away on business for the department, and so you get me today. And as Sarah said, my name is Jake Johnson. I am the Deputy Director for Information Technology Services Division at Department of Rehabilitation. I'm the Chief Information Officer, so basically fancy computer guy. I'm also wearing another hat right now because our Chief Deputy Director, Victor Duran, is away on a special assignment for the year. So I, along with another executive on our team, Kim Rutledge, so I, along with her, am providing Chief Deputy Director coverage too. So I am legally blind and have been so since birth. I'm a former consumer of Department of Rehabilitation Services. So when I think about how long I've been with the department, if I count back to when I was a consumer, it's quite a number of years. But in terms of working for the department, I've been with the department for my job for a little bit more, I guess about 12 and a half years now. And I've done a number of jobs. I recently, before becoming the CIO, I was the branch manager for our administrative services in IT, which includes like the service desk and project management and like administration, like procurement and that sort of thing. Before that, I managed our software engineers and quality assurance staff. And then prior to that, I was well, I guess it really all through the most of my tenure at the department, I have in some fashion or another overseen our assistive technology and web accessibility services. So mostly technology roles. And really, that's what I've done for my whole career. Before being at Department of Rehabilitation, I was with the Franchise Tax Board, where I was an information security specialist. And then before that, I was at Department of Finance, where I had a number of technical roles, probably the most significant of which was being the lead, the technical lead for the budget systems, for the IT support of the budget systems. So pretty long career, but really couldn't have done any of it without the Department of Rehabilitation Services. When I was just starting out as a young person, I was on SSI and was trying to go to college and just manage everything and become a professional and be able to get a good job. So I think there are probably a lot of folks that are either in that same position or at least have been. So that's a little bit about me, just so you kind of have a bit of context and know where I'm what I'm bringing in terms of my lived experience. Moving along, I just want to provide a few kind of I guess acknowledgments here. I just want to say that I'm just very honored to be here today and thankful for the opportunity to speak with you all. Just want to thank the conference attendees. I mean, it's a big deal to attend a conference like this, and it takes time out of your schedule. I mean, we all have things to do, and taking time out to be advocates and to just speak up and be counted and be part of the good work that's going on, it's a huge deal. So thank you all to the conference attendees for being here. The CCB leadership, Sarah, really I can't say enough about the work that you all are doing. It's just great to be here and to share this time with you all. It takes a lot of work to put on a conference like this, so thank you very much for doing it. I want to thank the DOR staff, everyone at the department, and in particular the team that's here today, Sue and everybody on the team. And then, of course, our partners that are essential to our ability to deliver the services that we do for Department of Rehabilitation. Just want to thank everybody for the part that it takes all of us, right? We all have to be able to do our part to make things come together and work well for everyone. So thank you all very much. Moving along to talk about the information we have for you today. So I'm going to give you kind of an overview of where we are at the federal, state, and department levels, just in terms of the landscape we're operating in as Department of Rehabilitation. And in doing so, I want to say a couple of things up front. One is that there is going to be a question and answer session a bit later on in the program. So please, I'm going to stay for questions after Sue and the team have a chance to speak in more detail about the programs. I'm going to stay until we can have questions after that. So please, if you have questions, we want to hear them. The second thing that I'm going to say is, as I'm talking about some of the information that we're sharing today, I would like to just recommend and appeal to you all to get in contact with us. If I reference something that you want to know more about, or if I refer to some information that you don't have, that you feel like you should have, you just want to learn more, or whatever the case may be, please reach out to us. Please connect with us so that we can get you the information you need. We're happy to do it, and we want you to be engaged with us. So please, if I talk about something that you don't know about, or I reference where we sent something out, or something that you think you should have, please don't hesitate to connect with us to get it, because we want to make sure you have all the information that you need from us. So getting into some of this information at the federal level, the main thing that I want to call your attention to is that we anticipate that we'll have large sums of reallotment funding coming in this year. There's a process later this summer. If you don't know what reallotment is, it's kind of I feel like it's kind of an unusual term. It's just the reallotment is really funding that the federal government makes available to the states to run their vocational rehabilitation program. So every state has a program like DOR, and so they're funded to provide services through those programs. And in some instances, states don't use all the funding that's allocated to them. So there's a way for them to revert it back to the federal government. And once that happens, the federal government in recent years, the federal government has had significant amounts of funding that have been reverted back. And so what they do is they have this reallotment process where they make it available. If there are states that are able to use all their funding and are able to use additional funding, like California, we use all of our money that's funded to us, and then we're able to use more if it's available. So we just apply for that funding to the federal government, and we've gotten funding through the reallotment process for the past couple of years, and we anticipate that happening again. And really what that means for us and for the people we serve is that there will just be additional dollars available for for vocational rehabilitation services. So it basically all, anything that we could spend money on as a vocational rehabilitation service that would fit into our federal grants, we're able to spend that same money that comes through realignment. So that's really all it is. So moving on to the state level, I just want to highlight a few points about the budget process that we're in right now. So in January, for those who are familiar at all with how the state budget process works, the governor's budget proposed, rather outlined a $38 billion shortfall, and then also gave solutions for how to close the gap, the budget gap. So that happened in January. The state controller's office, who reports revenue, is reporting that revenue is coming in under the projections. So so that $38 billion, the state controller's office is projecting that budget shortfall could actually be larger. And the budget process is well underway. There are budget hearings that are taking place now and will be for the next, for the next few months until we have the enacted budget. So that's going on. And then we do have the governor's May revision. So that's when the governor just submits an update to the proposed budget. So that happens in the middle of May, and that, so we're expecting that's going to be coming soon. That's kind of the next thing that'll happen. Then we'll have the enacted budget in July. So we're in that process. Like I said, we're going through budget hearings. So there's that, and that's affecting our department. Also, there are a number of initiatives that are underway that we're participating in and supporting. We have the CA 2030 reform, the AAA 2030 reform, to modernize the nearly 50-year-old network of agencies that serve our aging population. It's really working to identify how that system can evolve to meet the challenges that are coming in the future. We know that the aging population is expanding, and that the future looks very different than the past. So there's work underway to just modernize and strengthen that system. We have the master plan for developmental services, which will create the roadmap to modernize and improve this decades-old system that delivers critical developmental services to the hundreds and thousands of Californians that are served by that system. We have reform of the foster care rates, which will support the individualized needs and strengths of children and youth in the system so that they can be supported in a placement setting with relatives and extended family as much as possible, with the goal of just leading to better outcomes for the foster care system. We're building on the behavioral health reforms that CalHHS agency with its departments, which includes DOR, will continue to develop a roadmap for the implementation of all our connected behavioral health efforts. And really, these efforts just reflect the continued importance of innovation, right? We know that the population is changing, that there's just a need for services that better address the needs of the people that we all serve, and that these efforts really identify and exemplify the need for boldness in our thinking and in our actions. Each one of these efforts and innovations, it must include people with disabilities, right? It must include disability. We have to be in there working to address the equity for people with disabilities. We need to make sure that all of these programs, as we're making changes to them, as we're improving them, as we're expanding them, as we're tailoring them to meet the current needs, It's our responsibility as Department of Rehabilitation to represent and ensure that disability is adequately included, right? We need to make sure that we have the seat at the table and that we're pushing to make sure that all of our needs and services are effective for the people that we serve. So that's all very exciting work that's going on at the state level. We also have we have our name change that's coming. I don't know. I hope you all have heard about that. We have long held that our name needed to be changed because it really the current name that we have now, it's just not as applicable as it once was, right? Our services have changed over the years. We address the not only the employment needs, but the independent living needs of people with disabilities. We do a lot of other things too. So the idea is that that we just need to change to reflect really the outcomes that we're looking for now. And we've had our current name for 60 years, and we've long held, as I say, we've held that there's a need for a change. Just as we undertake this, and as we're going through this process, I mean, we're kind of in the middle of it. So just want to keep in mind for all of you that these actions are driven by opportunity that's presented now. We've thought that we've needed a name change for a while, but there just hasn't been a good opportunity to do it. The environment for change exists now. The only thing is that it's not always in our time frame, right? It's not. Sometimes we don't have as long of a runway for this sort of thing as we would like. So we're just, as the saying goes, striking while the iron's hot. We've been in a series of engagements over the past weeks and months around our name and just trying to understand just the way that it's viewed and perceived. All this has led to work identifying names that reflect those outcomes of our work. The window for engagement is very short. It's just a very narrow window, I guess I would say. And so just some of what we've done, in addition to our executive engagements, we've also engaged strategic internal stakeholders in the internal team at DOR. We've engaged key stakeholders from across our service providers and people we serve and groups that we, community groups and what have you, just a lot of key stakeholders we've engaged with. We have some community engagement coming up in actually next week. We have a couple of webinars that are taking place. I want to say it was on the 8th and on the 11th. We have webinars just engage around our name and get feedback from the community. So this is one of those places where if you didn't see that email, if you haven't gotten the invitations for that, let us know, because we can make sure that we share that with CCB and make sure that it can get out to you. So we have that piece. So that's really everything at the state level. So moving on to the department level, we have our proposed budget. Recall that I mentioned the proposed budget above. So our proposed budget is $576.3 million this year. We have 1,883 positions. So part of our budget includes the CPU voice options redirection of $3.6 million in funding to make this the voice options program permanent. It's been a pilot for the past 3 years, so we're making that program permanent, so we're very proud of that. And then we have Assembly and Senate budget hearings are underway now, as I mentioned, so we're going through those. And then the last piece, well, actually, I shouldn't say, I got a couple more. The last sort of the technical piece here is that we have a number of annual reports. We have our appeals and mediation, the 722 report. We have the OIB 7-0B report. We have the, for BEP, we have the RSA 15. And then we have the TBI state partnership, the SRC, the Assistive Technology Act, the ILC 704 reporting. And this all is provided for policymaker and public information on the program and fiscal performance. And our goal really is that you know, this is our go-to source of response for responding to requests on these respective programs. So we encourage you all to give this information a close reading. Encourage your definitely encourage you to dedicate time to just understanding the information and addressing areas that need improvement. We definitely we welcome your recommendations for how we can improve the programs and the fiscal performance. So those things, and we know it's work to dig into this stuff. But if you have an interest in it, we want to hear from you because we know where we're coming from. We know what our perspective is from where we sit, but we may not know yours, and you may have valuable contributions to make to that conversation around our programs and services. And so we encourage you to do that. Moving along, see, this is where I had said I had another big piece here. So I want to talk next about some of our personnel and staffing kinds of items that we have happening now. We actually have a lot going on in this area. So we are establishing what we're calling an ombudsman position at the department. So what this is we have a position now that to help us with addressing directorate level complaints that are not being resolved at the program level. So if we have a consumer of our services that has something going on that they would ordinarily raise above the program level and be looking for some executive level or director level engagement, this ombudsman position is set up to help in those instances. So one of the challenges that we have, I guess we could call it a dilemma, is that sometimes we have our directorate, you know, so like Joe, right? We have someone at the director or chief deputy or the executive level that's intervening to solve a problem that a consumer is experiencing. And then we're either setting a precedent by resolving it a certain way, and it's a special circumstance. And so, you know, if the director determines to resolve that issue in a certain way, it establishes a precedent. Maybe it circumvents the local leadership that we're trying to solve the problem. You know, so we don't want that, right? We want to be mindful of sort of what the consequences are if the directorate gets involved at that level. Then on the other side, we also, if the directorate doesn't get involved, then we risk having the issue just go unresolved and end up being escalated later on because it just isn't being dealt with, right? So this ombudsman will be sort of an intermediary that allows the directorate to be responsive without engaging directly, without actually like Joe having to call somebody back, right? We can have somebody, the ombudsman will be able to kind of take care of that, right? And the beauty of this role is that the ombudsman has access to everybody in the department. So wherever that individual determines they need to go to get help, they can do that. They can reach out to anybody and help get some help looking at whatever the problem is. So it's really, really excited to have this. It's a staff services manager level position. And the other thing that this position is going to do is provide a centralized and impartial officer to address the more complex or sensitive complaints. So not only the sort of the challenging ones, but also the sensitive ones where we need to go through other avenues besides just our, you know, the normal program support that we would provide. This ombudsman's able to kind of have a more sensitive approach potentially. And then another piece is that this position is going to be able to serve as a resource for collecting and analyzing complaint data. So in IT, we are big believers in this sort of thing, where we can sort of collect all of our complaints or our problems that people are experiencing and look at them together, and just to see if there are patterns, right? If there are, let's say there are issues that are resulting in equity concerns, for example, we want to be able to see, like, wow, do we just need to change our process in some way? So Michael Thomas is the individual that is that we've selected to be the ombudsman. So he has started in March. A lot of you may know Michael. So Michael has advanced cultural competency around disability etiquette, clearly evidenced by his lived and professional experience, demonstrated success in strategies for conflict resolution and provision of advocacy for consumer rights, knowledgeable of our programs and services, availability to people with disabilities, especially our vocational rehabilitation and independent living programs. So very excited to have Michael in this role. I personally, I can't think of anybody better to that could be a better. I mean, this role is in very good hands with Michael. So we're excited about getting this work underway. So next, I just want to talk a little bit about just the beginning of our next iteration of leadership transition for key positions at the department. So we recently hired a new manager in our human resources branch, Molly Laughlin Risk, just recently started in human resources. She's a SSM, or Staff Services Manager 2. We have a vacancy right now. Our business services section manager position is vacant, has been since January 2024. So that's also a Staff Services Manager 2 level position. We're recruiting for that. We have a couple of district administrator positions that are open. Actually, we have one that became vacant in December of 2023 that we're recruiting for, we've been recruiting for. We have a couple of regional director positions that are just very recently being vacated by folks retiring. And so those are at the Staff Services Manager 3 level. We have a vacancy that will soon be recruiting for in Specialized Services Division at the executive level. So that's in the pipe for recruitment soon. And you know, I just want to say for these positions, we do have a transition that's happening now, and we definitely more to come. There always seems like there's transition happening, and I would say that it has been and continues to be a definite time of change. And I just want to say, and some of this comes from a person with a disability, has been all my life, and someone who has also worked all my life. I always kind of joke with people that I think since I was 16 years old, I think I've been unemployed for about 45 minutes during my whole life. So I can't say enough about the need to have qualified people with disabilities applying for these roles. We need to ensure that we have representation from the communities we serve. We're committed to that as a department. We want to make sure that we have people in these leadership roles that reflect the lived experiences of the people in our communities that we're serving. It also requires that the candidates be ready, right? Not only from the position of being able to represent the community, but also just in terms of being ready for the opportunity. And I just want to say that, you know, the time to get ready for the opportunity is not when the opportunity comes up. It's beforehand, right? It's to always be preparing for the next thing that you want to do. So if you want to know more about the open recruitments, let us know. We can pass them along to you, the ones that are open now. And then last, I kind of saved this one for last because a new position at the department that we're recruiting for. Something that we're starting to see at other departments too, and we're definitely proud, very proud to be implementing this role at our department, is we're going to be recruiting soon for a chief equity officer. And so that position will be overseeing our Office of Civil Rights. It's an executive level position. It's for those who know state service, it's a career executive assignment level position. And it'll oversee our civil rights, a lot of the work we're doing around equity, some of our accessibility efforts. So that position will oversee and also coordinate. So it seems like we always have initiatives around equity more and more as we understand the need for equity and as we start to continue to put efforts into place. Our equity chief will be central to that in making sure that we're driving all the efforts forward and that they have executive representation at the department. So as that one, once that recruitment begins, we want you to all have a chance to take a look at that and apply or pass it along to someone if you know someone who would be good for that role. We're very, very much interested in employing people from the communities we serve. So with that, I will conclude my remarks and pass it on to, I don't know if I'm passing back to CCB or if I should just pass straight to Sue Pelbeth.
Go ahead and pass right on to Sue. But I am going to say really quick, I have the pleasure of working with this team from Specialized Services Division and Blindfold Services with the Blind Advisory Committee. And it's really exciting because I get to learn so many things. And just like Jake was saying, you ask, you'll get to learn, right? And so I definitely ask a lot of questions. And I want to really encourage folks to come to the Blind Advisory Committee meetings. They're on Zoom, they're in person in Sacramento. So Sue, go ahead and take it away.
All right, you hear me okay?
We do.
Okay, thank you, Jake. And by the way, thank you, Sarah and Gabe and team. Like Jake said, we know this is a huge undertaking to bring us all together. We really appreciate it. And this is the fun stuff for me, right? The specialized, so again, I'll go back. I'm Sue Pelbeth. I'm the deputy director over the Specialized Services Division. And there are five sections in my division: the Orientation Center for the Blind, the Business Enterprise Program, Blindfold Services, and Peter Dawson and Laura are here to share all about that. The Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, and Jay Harris is to share about that and lots more, and Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services. So we do a lot over here, and we're always busy, but it's really fun. And again, it's really a pleasure to get to present what we are doing today. New stuff. Here's something new that we're doing. So Peter Dawson and I are currently developing a process with CDCR that will connect blind and visually impaired justice-involved adults during their last year of incarceration with a BFS counselor located in the area where they live. So what that means is we can provide services while people are still incarcerated. So our hope is to get better. There's a lot of logistics, as you can imagine. These people are located in institutions all over the state, but fortunately so is Blindfold Services. And the hope is that we connect with people, let them know what we do. They want our services. We connect them with a counselor and we start that process on their, that will hopefully lead to employment and independent living later on. So instead of waiting till people are out and trying to, kind of navigate that world, we want to be there and meet them where they're at as soon as possible. Warm handoff kind of idea, right? So super exciting, very new to what we normally do. And I think the climate has changed. And I think for the first time, CDCR has staff that are all in on this. So again, super excited about it. And next time we come together, I'll let you know what we're doing, how's it going. And then one other thing with CDCR, the chief counsel over the Board of Parole hearings recently reached out to us, to the department, for technical assistance, because they needed some expertise on how to send out communications and stay in contact with those folks who are on parole who are blind and visually impaired. So of course we shared our expertise with them, but then we jumped on the opportunity to share about all the other services that we can provide to those folks. So hopefully, as we start meeting with more of the boots on the ground folks in the parole officers and such, we're going to be able to connect more of those folks and they can become consumers. We all know that life with purpose will most likely lead to less recidivism, and people will live better quality lives in their communities and with employment. All right, let's see. Okay.
Hey,
All
quickly,
right.
Sue. This is Jay. I was just gonna say I
Sure.
probably missed it, but CDCR, did you want to tell people what that is?
Oh, thank you, Jay. I was going to start my talk with that. I'm so sorry. You're right. We use acronyms all the time. And I got to tell you, half the time I'm raising my hand in our own meetings. So, CDCR is the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Thank you, Jay. So if I do that again, Jay, anybody on the team, stop me and help me. I did say Orientation Center for the Blind instead of OCB. But thanks, that was great. Okay, Business Enterprise Program, BEP. I'm going to talk a little bit about the updates in this program, then I'm going to hand it off to Peter and Laura about BFS, and then I'll come back to you folks to share about Orientation Center for the Blind. So Business Enterprise Program really took a hit during COVID. The workplace and the workforce changed drastically, and we're recovering now, but we're recovering in a different way, developing locations that are different, and exploring other options at this point, because with the workforce being in the office 2 or 3 days a week, it's never going to recover where it makes it worthwhile for a vendor to have a small business in a lot of our state building locations. So, all right, I'm going to start with the training program. We haven't had anyone in training since pre-COVID. So, we have a training officer. His name is Mark Leva. And this part of the program is about training consumers with the Department of Rehab to become business enterprise. Program, I guess, small business owners in the program, vendors, if you will. And so it's intensive program, of course, because running your own business takes a lot of skills and abilities. So right now we have five consumers in the pipeline to go into the full training program. Three of them have completed their prerequisite of being assessed at the Orientation Center for the Blind. Two have completed their ServSafe Manager certificate. And these two have met with their counselor and training officer. And within 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to start the 20-day evaluation in the field with a vendor. If this continues and they continue to move forward through the prerequisite process, we expect in June we will start the curriculum process, and that's a lot of intensive learning. So, work experience is involved prior to going into the program, and then all these other pieces. There is so much more to this program, but you can reach out to me directly or any of my team in BEP. And if you have questions that we can answer at a sort of a higher level, feel free to ask me at the end. I think we're going to take questions at the end. Job development. Okay, these are locations that are coming up for BEP and they're big deals. So the biggest deal going on and is under development right now is the West Coast Marine Corps contract for food service. The Marine Corps, unlike our other Department of Defense partners, does one contract for all its Marine Corps bases on the West Coast and Arizona. So those interviews are going to, let me see what. There's an it's a military panel that comes together to select the vendors who will win those five very special lucrative positions for our vendors. Okay, that's that. You guys may have questions. My BEP folks are probably on this attending this conference as well, so reach out to them. They are definitely the experts about what's needed if you're interested in coming into the program. Okay. We have one more contract underway, and it's going to go into effect is with the San Diego Coast Guard. I think that contract's going to be up and running here in a few weeks, and we already have a vendor selected for that. All right. New announcements. I'm not going to get into the details of those, but there are three brand new locations that are going to be announced here in a few weeks. And then good news for folks, there are two Caltrans locations. And again, these are very lucrative locations for our vendors, are about to come back online in the next 2 months after being under remodeling for years. So super excited about that. And I think that is about the highest level news I have for the Business Enterprise Program. Sarah, can you think of anything you want to ask about that?
No, I think you covered it all.
Okay, I'll hand it back to you and you can BFS.
All right. So I asked Peter and Laura to present together because I think they're fun together. So Peter and Laura, take it away.
Well, hello everybody. Can you hear me okay, Testy? Okay, Laura, you on?
I'm here.
All right. Since we've been working together for about 25 years in one capacity or another, it's probably better we go on together because we kind of finish each other's thoughts anyway. And
Not
but
scary at
I
all.
so I'm
Sorry.
gonna probably go over just a few things, and if she chimes in or vice versa while we're each talking about things, don't be surprised. And we'll try our best not to talk over each other. So, but before we do that, I think I heard somebody at the beginning asking us to give a little introduction to ourselves. And I think most of you have probably heard my story, so I'll keep it short. I was 18 when I was in a motorcycle accident 3 weeks before high school graduation up in Seattle many years ago. And that's how I lost my sight. I'd been accepted to be a Navy pilot into that program, passed all the medical stuff, and was excited to move forward in college with that and then all that training. But obviously that went out the window. And I went through the Department of Services for the Blind up in Seattle for many years. And one thing led to another, and I ended up being a lawyer somehow. And I just wanted to say that whenever I'm at these conferences or dealing with other people, like hearing those stories we heard in the beginning, it just hits me, you know, how important this department is and these groups, advocacy groups are, the back, all these things. Because when I was in my accident, all I could think about was like, my life is over. I don't know what in the world I'm going to do. I didn't know any blind people, and I just couldn't see any way out of this hole and or any future. I didn't think I'd ever get married. I didn't think I'd ever have kids or a family or be able to buy a house or have a decent job and obviously not drive. That really upset me. And but you know, with a lot of work, and it turned the department turned my life around. But I was also involved with both the WCB, which is part of the ACB, and the NFB up in Washington, and other groups that really gave light at the end of the tunnel. And I did end up practicing law for years, and up in Seattle in various roles, big firms, attorney general, and then my own firm. And then I just didn't like it. And I came back down to San Diego, and the department was willing to help me out again to get started as a rehabilitation counselor for the blind. And of all the things I could have done, I really did go through all the career testing and everything. Like, what do I want to do at this point? Because I really don't like the law that much, although I did pretty well at it. And I ended up doing what my counselor, who I'm still in touch with after all these years, going back to the late 70s, Patrick Diamond, who changed my life, and was behind me and encouraged me and motivated me to do it. And that I can make it. It came to all my graduations and everything. And I remember if there's anybody in my life that changed it more than anybody, it was probably Patrick, And so I said, if nothing else, I can't imagine there's a more important thing to be in this world in terms of a career than the responsibility of being a vocational rehabilitation counselor. And I mean that. I mean, you really have your life in people's, in your hands, whether they can make it or not, or whether you believe in them or not. And I still tell counselors that. So anyway, my point is that I'm glad that I'm in this position. It's nice to hear those stories about these long lives. It's not just about work. It's about all these other things too, which you'll hear about from Jay and others later. But I'm just glad you are out there and that you have this conference and you invited us. And I have enjoyed working with Sarah as the new president of your group on the back. And I agree with her. Please join those meetings. I find them to be some of the most enjoyable meetings I go to. So I'm actually going to try to keep my little list here small, because I know there are going to be a lot of questions for Jay, and Laura's got some data I know she wants to share. So I'm going to go to just a few things here, basic things. First of all, some of you were able to go to the SB 105, which we had in person for the first time at the Orientation Center for the Blind last summer. It was great to try to get that back going. And now this fall, the third week of September, and more information will go out as soon as we get that contract finalized, which has not been easy to do, but it's almost done. You'll get a note about that. It'll be in Sacramento, and it will be for, I think, 3 days in the third week of September, I believe. But everybody's going to be at this event this time, including the service coordinators, the OTs who haven't seen each other, and those are office technicians in 5 years. And, all this since COVID has not been easy across the board. And it is good to meet and to reconnect and to energize the team. So, and that includes getting together with people like you who come and visit, and we'll probably have the vendors there as well, who always want to show a lot of their good things. That'll be at the Hilton, most likely in Arden West, but we'll confirm that later. The other big group is the that we've been dealing with in more recent years, especially since WIOA, which is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, the current funding source where we get our money from the federal government. The emphasis, and it's hard to believe it's almost 10 years old now, has been a focus on younger people, students in particular, 16 to 21, where we have to spend a certain amount of our money, 15%. And because they realize that, I think, based on all the articles and research, that the younger you reach people and can connect with them and give them work experience and other things that that law really pushes us towards, makes a much better opportunity and retention rate down the road of people getting jobs and being able to hang on to them. So with that in place, that's been a lot of our focus, and Laura will tell you some of these numbers in a couple minutes, but there has been a large increase in applications, and in particular with students, which is really great to see. I know a lot of states across the country had a very hard time in the ones that had certain services for the blinds or commissions in their states to get that 50%, which I can understand. But when I think back to like 2017, when the last homemakers were finally wrapped up and we focused on this new WIOA and students and all vocational, it was you know, that was a huge change. And then COVID hit. And then we all had to scramble to do that. And I saw the numbers plummet, you know, with applications. And we saw, you know, we just didn't know where it was going to end up. And that was across the board, but with all the other people in the Department of Rehab as well, and across the country. So it has come roaring back, not just with us, but all of the Department of Rehab, which is nice to see. Because I think the trend for some years before COVID was kind of down, down, down. I don't know all the reasons for it. I could speculate and I could give you some things I heard, but I'm just glad that BFS is part of it. And in an odd way, the ability for us to scramble and learn technology and remote things like we're doing right now, which people really didn't have that much experience with. It's been pretty remarkable. And I want to give Jake, since he's on the call, credit for understanding this, both within the Department of Rehab and outside with our consumers. It's nice to have Jake as a deputy of ITSD because he understands. And Jay is on the call, and Jay's been really great about taking over this JAWS users group that he's kept going, that we've kind of cobbled together. But Jake has also hired new staff and given us more time with those staff to really help us as not just our consumers, us as counselors. And we're hiring more and more blind people as counselors and managers and other positions too, to be able to do our jobs well with all this new technology. I mean, a lot of things have really changed. I mean, we're forced, the pedal went to the metal on having to learn this stuff. So with that, a lot of our consumers were able to get some remote jobs that were being allowed at home that were well-paying jobs. We've seen that reflected in the wages that they receive. And BFS still has the highest wages of all the districts in the state. The last one I looked at was over $30 an hour. And there's a median number that I know Laura has and she'll share with you. But and also we were up there as high as anybody, I think, with the average amount of hours per week in those wage reports. So good jobs, remote jobs, technology jobs, and a lot more STEM jobs, which is really great to see. A lot more opportunities there and great technology. So those are just some of the overall trends. I think I mentioned, or if I didn't, that there's this group CTEBVI. That's a long acronym, another one, like Sue said, California Teachers and Educators for the Blind and Visually Impaired. They're having like their, I don't know, 70th or something conference in LA in a couple of weeks. We're sending a large number of our BFS staff, probably around 25, to this conference because we're investing in the connections that that group gives us to the VI teachers in the high schools, because that's who we're really trying to focus on. And have our staff interact with them, get to know each other, and make connections and better understand and serve that group, since they deal with different law like IDEA versus, you know, what we deal with. But you know, there's a lot of crossover now. So that's been a big kind of change, I'd say, in the last 5 years too. And it's important to get reconnected to them because a lot of things have changed since COVID in terms of being able to get on campuses, for example, at the high schools. It's not as easy as it used to be. So, for example, one of the largest school districts in the state we're trying to deal with, and you just can't go on the campus anymore for like Los Angeles School District, which is, I think, the second biggest in the country or something. And lots of students. So you have to do these sort of remote sort of connections that are not as simple as they would sound with parents, students, everything else. And you just can't go onto campus anytime you feel like it. So that's been a big change, but we're working through it and doing well. The other thing I'll say we've done a good job on, and we have a regional business specialist and some business specialists, not that many, but they're a powerful little team that has really done a great job in getting a lot of our students work experience. And as you all know, like I said earlier, if you have work experience, especially when you're younger, and if you keep getting more as you go along, even if your ultimate goal is to be something else, it's really important. And all the research shows that the outcomes are better when you have had some work experience in your life. So we really have done quite a few hours and quite a few of those experiences with students and adults. To make that part of their goal, their IPEs, their individual plans for employment, to give them better success at the end. I think it's almost about that. I'm going to try to leave it short with that so Laura can kind of cover some of those things and fill in the gaps there. And because I know I want to leave it open for a lot of questions from the others later. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Laura, and if I need to say anything else, I'll chime in, but go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Peter. My name is Laura Rasmussen. I'm the district administrator for Blind Field Services, which means I have direct oversight over the 9 units that serve throughout the state of California. We have 9 managers and 43 counselors that serve California. So when I look at this, I don't know how many of you know how much information, so I will apologize for those that think this is too simple and apologize to those of you that think this is too detailed, because I know that hopefully you've got new people showing up at these meetings. The kind of cool story that with Peter and I worked together as counselors 20, like you said, 25 years ago, and then we worked in the same unit for 4 or 5 years down in San Diego. But our stories are very different. Peter being blinded later in life by an accident, and me being born at the time I was born blind. I mean, when I was born, they told you my parents, "You're going to need this kid's going to need to learn Braille." And that, because times have changed and knowledge has changed, and they were wrong. I did grow up in the legally blind community. I started school before the Rehab Act of 73, yet still got VH services. I am still in contact with my first VI teacher. I credit her for a lot of the confidence she built in me. Not even so much with the visual, like with the visual skills, as much as just being the champion of "you can do it" kind of a thing. We are very close now. Just very, very special in that respect. But I grew up wanting to be normal. Jake and I have had this discussion many times over lunch over trying to fake it and trying to pretend like we didn't have a visual impairment. And honestly, I was quite good at it. I could, and that was my thing. I just didn't want anybody to know. Not so much because I didn't want him to know. I didn't want to explain it over and over and over again. Like, "You wear glasses. How come you can't see? What is it you can't see? How come you can see this but not that?" And so I grew up in that world where I was, embarrassed or ashamed or, thought less of, but I participated. My mom sent me to Girl Scouts. I learned to play the flute, played in marching band. I hated that too because I couldn't see that well at night. No one really ever told me that I couldn't see well at night. This was like kind of the age that people really still didn't know that I didn't know what I didn't know. Which in some ways is kind of good. I still remember one of my best friends when I was in third grade coming back and said, "The eye doctor said I'm just a little bit blind." And I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that, she just needed glasses to bring her to 20/20." And I was far from it. I had no clue that I, how bad my vision was. But in addition to the regular
activities that my mom pushed, I also did the summer activities through what at that time was the Foundation for the Junior Blind, which is now way then became Junior Blind of America and Wayfinders and whatnot. I live far away from that, so I only did the summer programs. But I will tell you that the relationships I built with other visually impaired students was incredible. To this day, they are still some of my closest friends, even though I don't see them. When we get together, it's like you can connect on these little things that nobody else understands. And I'm sure many of you in the audience know exactly what I'm saying. So, that was my world. And then into my 20s, the miracle of contact lenses came into being. So by that point, pretty much the only thing I didn't do was I didn't drive, and I held things still pretty close to my face to read. But for the most part, I was really, really that, that wasn't as big of a deal. But again, there were some things that I didn't realize that I didn't realize. For example, it wasn't till I was chatting with a good friend who said, I used to think you were a snob because you never said hello to me first. You never, I, she goes, I didn't know till later that it was because you didn't see me. So what do I do now? I smile and just say hi to pretty much everybody I see. So people think I'm like some sort of clown smiling at everybody. But I still take that kind of phrase to things. I mean, still take that perspective many times and just kind of, I remember people very well once I connect to who they are, but I don't recognize them by face. Into my early 40s, I will just, the short version is there was bad stuff started to happen, but out of that bad stuff came a significant improvement in my vision, not to 20/20, but to the point where I could drive, not on the freeway, very limited, which was really good for about 10 years. And now I'm back into the normal people, normal vision thing of losing vision. So developing glaucoma, field loss, significant contrast sensitivity. So I'm in that world again where, at times I'll it looks like I can see everything fine, and other times I'll run into the corner of a wall. So I've been all over the vision charts. That's what I tell people, except normal. But normal is overrated. So, and my story with DOR, I went to DOR when I was in high school because somebody said that was a good place to go for some money for college, because there was no way that I wasn't going away, because there was just no way that I needed to do something normal. All my friends were driving. I couldn't do that normal thing, and I wanted to be normal in the worst way. So going to college was, in my world, normal. So I'll refrain from the bad stuff about DOR at that time, but let me just tell you, the only thing I really remember was going into a room with my mom and a very nice counselor who had a striped shirt and plaid pants and golf shoes. And that's all I remember about him. That's the only time I met him face to face. And I think I talked to him once during the next 5 years, talked to the service, the office people a couple times, received some bank draft for books. So I have been with DOR now for, well, as of next month, 36 years. And I kind of just fell into DOR. But since the beginning, my story has been it's got to get better. And so one of the things when I got into supervision and then later into administration was we can do better. And I think we are doing better. And we continue to do better. We are not perfect. So if you hear me say something and you go, wait, that's not been my experience, I want to hear about it. Because there's a lot of areas that we're not perfect in because we're people, and people are hard, but I want to do better. I want to make sure that we do better. So it's been a year since I addressed you all as a group, and a lot's happened in that year. Funny thing in my Facebook memories the other day was the trip home, because last time we were in person, and on that trip home, San Diego State basketball was playing to get into the final two, the championships for basketball. And so I thought, gosh, a lot has happened since that year. And this year we're not in the final, not even make it to the final four. But anyway, and within the last year, like Peter said, I've added work experience. And let me just add, that's paid work experience, real job type work experience. We've had people that have done work experience in food service, work experience in nonprofit setting, gardening, cooking, real any pl we try to match an interest. It's not always the case, but these individuals, both students and adults, are able to earn a real paycheck. The mechanism's convoluted, so I'm not even going to try to explain it here, but just know that if you need some work experience to get back into a field or to put on your resume, that has been very helpful. We have some amazing stories of people that had not worked in many years, got some work experience for a few months. Some of them, it gave them some current skills. Others, it just gave them the confidence to go for the next job and to build themselves up. And then we've had a few situations where the work experience was, let's just say, kind of a fail. When you show up at a job and you smoke some pot on the job and you get fired, that's not a good thing. But when you're 18 years old, you can take that opportunity and use it to. Sue had a personal experience. That's, she's laughed. She's got a big smile on her face. This individual, not only did he learn something, which is that your boss has a role in what you say and do and following the rules, he came back a year later to the work site. Did an amazing job. I believe he came back, but nevertheless, he went on
He
to work
did.
at an amazing job after doing failing at a work experience. A year later, came back the next summer, did that work experience, took that the skills that he learned not just from the work experience but from other learning, and was able to work at an amazing job. And he's doing just phenomenal. So this has been a piece that's long been missing and long talked about, and it's finally here. So the other things that have happened well, let me just walk back just a second. I remember using this phrase for the first time with you as a group was that this is not your parents' DOR. And some of you have parents that went to DOR, and I know that because I went to school with them. So I know that the experience is different at one time, and I will just be quite blunt because I was there. Is that we had specialists for the blind to keep them happy. It wasn't about work. I mean, we said it was about work, and sometimes people went to work, and that was a great thing. But now we believe, and as an agency, as Blindfold Services, we believe in the ability of a person who is blind to go to work, to make a good wage, to be able to support themselves and their family. So now we don't just hope for the best, we plan for the best employment outcome. So it's not just about dumping services on people, it's about, okay, what is the service that you're going to need to get to where you need to be? Our plans are now labor market driven. So that means that we are not going to say to somebody, okay, yeah, we understand you want to be an underwater basket weaver. Okay, what do you need? A degree in philosophy? Sure. No. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to have everything together when we start the plan, but we need to start the conversation early. Where do you want to work? What kind of job do you want to do? What do you need to do that job? What kind of equipment do you need to do that job? What kind of skills do you need to do to get to that job? We are not going to pay for equipment that you don't need on a job when you need a different kind of equipment. So, and we will pay for what you need. Okay, so let me be clear about that. We always pay for what you need, but we're not just here to dole out stuff. It's about what you need. And we are finding that people are actually much happier with our services when they know that there's a job at the end. And that's what we're all about, is a job at the end, not just services. And that's part of what the rebranding Sue is talking about. It's not just about renaming our agency. It's about saying we're here for work, for employment. We've talked about rebranding BFS. We're kind of holding back on that a little bit till the department branding is done, so that we can work in conjunction with that. But again, all of our services are geared towards work, and that includes independent living. We still do independent living so that somebody can go to work, because we do know that somebody who cannot cook and prepare meals for themselves or do grocery shopping can't go to work. I mean, how do you do all that whole thing? So that is part of the total solutions. So you there's always numbers floating around about where we've been, where we are. based on the quarters. What I did this afternoon was went back and looked at where have we gone since the last time I talked with you a year ago. In the last year, 357 people have been successfully closed, going to work, making sustainable wages. That's significant. We've also had 1,188 people apply for services through our department since I last spoke with you as a group. Some of the other changes, we are now back up just a bit. We're in our 20th year of being Blindfield Services because a group of advocates, a couple groups of advocates, including CCB and NFB and others, individuals got together and said, we're not happy with the services of DOR for the blind, got together. And long story short, that's how Blindfield Services became their own district, to have their own specialized services so that the counselors that you work with have the skills that you need and they don't have to go looking for them elsewhere. So that, not necessarily a change, but that's where we're going forward from, is that making sure that our counselors are appropriately trained. We have some of the philosophical changes that we've implemented recently include assistive technology early in the plan as we possibly can make it. As I'm sure some of you know, procuring assistive technology does take some time. And I won't go to many of the steps involved in it, but what I've been able to get my part of the staff to do is to say, is it reasonable that a person is going to need X, Y, and Z now? We're going to order X, Y, and Z now. That doesn't mean we won't do assessments if we need to, but what it means is we're not going to hold off something we know that the person's going to need to just for the sake of doing an assessment. Again, that's had amazing implications, particularly for individuals going to OCB, being able to start the training earlier, and the few other benefits to the individuals. And I think, again, building that confidence, being able to start services earlier. Another thing that's been implemented department-wide is access to services through what we call the consumer payment card, which is like a debit card. Again, I won't get into the mechanisms because it's very complicated, but basically what happens is that when the counselor and the consumer and individual agrees that the service is needed, let's say, for example, books for school, funds are loaded onto that card, and that individual can go to whatever bookstore they need to get the books that are required for school. So that means that an individual, maybe their school bookstore has a book for math, but they're out of the reading book. Well, that individual can order the reading book from Amazon, get the book from the bookstore, and maybe they need to go to a separate bookstore for something else. That is a huge, huge change. Again, to go back into the day, when I first started with DOR as a consumer, I was given a bank draft every semester. It looked kind of like a check, but you go to the bookstore and most of the time they go, what's that? Sometimes I'd have to go back, and going back into that, I didn't even want to go shopping for books with my friends, because that was like a big thing, you know, when you first started, you know, you go and you buy books when you live in the dorms, you go over together. I stopped doing that because half the time there wasn't somebody to take care of it, which was hard enough in itself. But then I'd have to explain to my friends why I couldn't get my books now, and what this card, this piece of paper was, and was there enough money on this? With the new consumer payment card, the student gets in line, they pull out the card that's been loaded with, again, after agreement from the client, from the counselor, because this is not a credit card, but it's loaded with funds. They get in line, the card is run through just like a credit card, and the person walks away with their books. If they don't have what they need at that bookstore, they can go to the next bookstore. So that is a huge, huge step forward in Department of Rehab Services. And that's been a long time coming. We know it's not a perfect system, but let me just tell you, from those of you who might have been there, it is just 12 steps forward. And then finally, our training element, part of the requirements of SB 105, the bill, was specialized training for our staff. Traditionally, we've done that through the form of conferences, yearly conferences, and typically it's been all staff. We tried a couple times during the pandemic to get it going, and we had a hotel contract in place, then COVID came back, and we did a lot of stuff online, but you know, it's just not the same. So this past summer, we kind of it was in person, but we had to do it a little bit modified in case we had a resurge of COVID. So only our counseling staff was able to come this time. We had a day for the managers to have some leadership development training, which they haven't been able to do. And then the second day was the full day of training just for the counselors. So that was kind of hard because a lot of people wanted to be there that we just couldn't accommodate. But we did sessions on history of specialized services, some updates, talking a lot about employment readiness, because one of the big issues right now is people say that they're ready to go to work and they believe that they're ready to go to work, but maybe there is a piece that we need to address. That the individual needs to address. So that's a big thing right now. Because somebody could be, we're really good right now at getting people the training that they need. That's an area that has advanced considerably, identifying their training needs, but making sure that people are skilled up in JAWS, they're skilled up in the proper interviewing techniques, they understand teams. And which is just, that whole accessibility piece to it. And yes, something's accessible but not usable. And how does that work? So, we did some training in helping people to identify what is ready for employment. We did training in human guide, which is the new word for sighted guide. If none of you knew that, I learned that this summer. It's a human guide because a guide can be blind. We did a lot of training on the schooling. A visually impaired, like what happened, what's the different types of school experiences for the visually impaired? Is it a mainstreaming? Is it specialized school for the blind? Is it some combination of both? And then we did some best practices around student services. On the last day, we had speakers from NFB and CCB come and talk about your groups, because we do encourage consumers to get involved in the blindness groups. That is something that when I first started working with DOR, that was the unspoken rule. Don't get involved with them. They're just here to push DOR around. And I have to tell you, that has been one of the biggest changes that I've seen over the last 20 years, is working together with consumer groups like your own, where everybody is working for the same good, the greater good. People with blind, visually impaired and blinding becoming more independent and going to work. And that's what we want. This year, we are having an SB 105 in person. Like Peter said, we are planning to, the plan is now to invite everybody, to invite all of our support staff, to invite the community groups that want to come and listen to whatever the presenters are. Because again, it's good that our staff know, our staff are required to know, but if our community partners know as well, then again, it's the greater good for people with vision loss. But in addition to our conference-based programs, we are doing some, we are kind of refining what the competencies are for our counselors and support staff. So there was a lot of work done on this initially, but we have to kind of go back and figure out, well, where are we now? I mean, obviously, a counseling staff needs to understand what assistive technology is, but what does that mean? What does that mean in the field of blindness? What does that mean for training? What does that, and how to appropriately do a human guide technique? How to show a support person how to do a human. So those kind of competencies we are revisiting, and we're going to be working on a manual for that for our staff. We have three counselors that were selected to participate in the vocational rehabilitation certificate. I'm sorry, the vision specialist in vocational rehabilitation certificate at Mississippi State University. Our own Peter Dawson is a graduate of that program. And for it used to be that part of it was in person, but now it's all virtual. But what it's basically, this program is designed for individuals who have a counseling background but have not necessarily worked with individuals who are vision loss. Only 14 people across the whole United States were accepted into this year's cohort. 14, three of them are from California. So that is an amazing a testament to our counselors' abilities. And one of them actually does have a life experience with vision loss. So not only were three out of the 14 selected, two out of those three are being paid for through an RSA grant. So this is really, really good for DOR and Blind Field Services because these three individuals will be able to support ongoing training with our staff. And then the last training piece that we've had, which like we said, sometimes things take longer than we expect. I've been working on this for quite a while. I hope to be farther along in this, but we're getting there. We have signed a contract for a low vision optometrist to provide training to our staff via the Blackboard system. So the contract was signed. The first module is almost ready, but it's about a 14 module. I'm sorry, I'm reading here. I think it's 15 lectures over the next 2 years that will be available through our own internal system. The way the contract was written, it's only going to be available to our staff and to our contract partners. But what it'll be is things like what are the type, how does the eye work? What are the types of vision loss? What are low vision aids? How do you assess for low vision aids? All those kind of things that people seem to need to be refreshed on periodically. Or say we have a staff person who says, I just got diagnosed with diabetic retinopathy. What does that mean? So the idea being they will be able to go and figure that out, for their own information and or to share with family. But primarily, this is for our Blind Field Services staff. I think that's about it. Yeah, that's it. I'm gonna wrap it up for this moment. For the moment, like I said, we're gonna be open for questions at the end. And I really, like I said, if something you said, you go, yes, this is great, but this isn't what I'm getting, or my friend isn't getting this, I want to hear about it. Okay, so I'm going to turn it back over to Sue.
All right. Thanks, Laura. I know they love hearing all about it, really. I'm going to share a little of my story right after I do a very quick update on what's happening at the Orientation Center for the Blind. That's OCB. And by the way, every one of my team here today, including Jake, who's not my team, but a team member, colleague, we all have lived experience. We're all former consumers with the department. And so we've walked your walk in one way or another. So, all right, OCB, Orientation Center for the Blind, the latest news there. Number one, they're 60 years old this year from the date of opening. That's quite amazing. In the days prior to COVID, OCB operated a year-round program. People came in every week and left every month. And most people came and stayed for 9 months to a year. But when COVID hit, we had to figure out a way that we could protect people as well as continue to provide the services that people wanted. So we went to a cohort system. So everybody's got their own room now, nobody shares. We take on 16 consumers every quarter, so 4 times a year. So we're still serving the same number of students per year, but it's a totally different delivery of services. Once in a while, we do keep somebody for an extra 12 weeks. That just depends. Everything like in DOR is a case-by-case, person-centered approach to the training and learning that they need. Let's see, our cohort started, the spring just started at the end of March. Our personnel updates, because it's important for all of you to know in case any of you are looking for jobs, DOR has many of them. At OCB, we just interviewed for a computer and related technology second teacher. We'll let you know. You'll see if you go to the back meetings, you'll hear all about the new hires quarterly. The program administrator position currently in an acting role is Carrie Stamps. He's the QRP. Those interviews just took place this week. We're currently recruiting for a daily living skills teacher. Difficulties there because this classification was created 60 years ago. Our teacher, Teresa Torres Garcia, did the job for 37 years, just retired. And so now, when you work at the CalHR job descriptions, it doesn't match anything. So we're really working hard to figure it out, right? In the meantime, it is being advertised, and we're recruiting for that position as well. Okay. There we go. Okay, program enhancements. So full power self-defense program or agency has been providing services, actually OCB contracts with them, and they come in and provide seminars every cohort. So all our students have an opportunity to participate in actually three seminars, two from full power, and they're about boundaries in the workplace and safety out in the community. And then we also offer a sexual health and education seminar for any interested consumers. Again, these are voluntary. And then these seminars all include the topics about healthy relationships, consent, and healthy boundaries. Let's see. Oh, OCB, as Laura mentioned, is a paid work experience site. So consumers with the department can come to OCB and work in the cafeteria at different positions. They can do custodial work experiences and groundskeeping as well. We did have a consumer that I fired, and it ended up being the best thing for him. He is successfully employed, and we couldn't be more proud. But those soft skills are important, right? How to behave at work and show up and all those parts. And then, of course, we're still doing the 40-hour, 2-week orientation and mobility boot camp and the work-related and skills assessment, work-related behaviors and skills assessment. And okay, last February 2023, the BAC had a group come and present called Hearts for Sight Counseling Services. Well, we're about to go into contract with them at OCB. They provide real true counseling and therapy. They specialize in adjustment to blindness, but of course they do all types of therapeutic counseling. And all their counselors are visually impaired. Wonderful group. Happy to work with them. They did provide some free services for our consumers, but now we're about to go into a paid contract for those folks. Woohoo! Okay, that's about it for OCB. As far as myself, I am a totally blind woman. I was born with perfect vision. All of a sudden, I had juvenile macular degeneration at 10. And then in my 40s, developed retinitis pigmentosa, left me totally blind. I went to the Department of Rehabilitation for Services in 2006. And the best part of the story for all of you is Laura Rasmussen was my first counselor. So very proud to say that, very proud of my team. And now I'm going to hand it off to Jay Harris to talk about OIB and AB 2480.
Thanks, Sue. My name is Jay Harris. Like Sue said, I have been with the department for about 12 years. I came to the department after, I'll go back quickly and tell my story. I was born with 20/20 sight, was diagnosed with diabetes at 1 year old, so very young. And suddenly at 21 years of age, unexpected retinal bleeds in my eyes were noted during one of my eye visits. And 14 months later, I was totally blind. That was after a whole bunch of surgeries and many, 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 many medical interventions. But I was referred to the Department of Rehabilitation shortly after those 14 months and had a counselor teacher for the blind. I'm bringing that up because it's important in regards to some of what's changed in our grants programs that I oversee. But I was introduced to a counselor teacher for the blind from Department of Rehabilitation who set me up with helping me start learning some basic Braille, some basic human guide skills for myself and my family, and those kind of wonderful things. And then I jumped right back into going to back into school. I had been on a career path going to college and jumped back in, changed majors a couple of times, which I don't know. I think that's fairly common, but figured out what I wanted to do and graduated and went to work for an independent living center, where I worked for about 14 and a half years, 10 of which I oversaw the grant that I helped write for our older individuals who are blind program. So I came to the department with a strong understanding of how things worked in the older individuals who are blind program from the organization or service provider side. And then I've spent the last 12 and a half years overseeing grant programs at our department. And currently I'm overseeing the OIB grants, and they have newly this year, starting October 1st, we added additional money into the grants to help make sure that we augmented the OIB program, because we've known for many years our grants have been $3.1 million for many years. And the last year, I think, was one of the first times we awarded $4.1 million, so a little bit extra because there was money that hadn't been spent over the years, and we wanted to give the grantees an opportunity to spend some of that money that they hadn't been able to spend in prior years for whatever reason. And the legislation that passed, I'm circling back around here to AB 2480. The legislation that yourselves and many other folks helped advocate for in California, this legislation rewrote some of the old language in that talked about what Department of Rehab could do, how they could provide services with counselor teachers, and the legislation made it possible for us as a department to award that money to our existing OIB providers, or if we had money available and could, it was to be used for this purpose, we were able to award additional money. So currently, this year, we have awarded $7.1 million. And for those of you out there who are numbers folks, if you think about that, that's a really large increase to folks' grants, right? If we had been awarding 3.1 million, and now we're at 7.1. So the great news is that for many of your OIB programs, that's given them some additional funding to fund additional staff time and oftentimes purchase of devices for consumers who are 55 and older. And employment status, it's an interesting thing, but employment status in the older individuals who are blind program doesn't matter. There's no restriction as to whether or not people are employed. The legislation implies that employment would be difficult, but it doesn't say you can't be a consumer of OIB if you have a job. So we're seeing interesting things happening in our OIB program now, as that I think that retirement age is it's been creeping up, right? For many of us, I'm 53 and I certainly won't be retiring at 55. So for many of us, we need to wait a little bit longer till we retire. So that program is available. I can make sure the list gets to Sarah so that you guys wish to pass that on. The service provider organizations, they're also available on the OIB website, the DOR. So DOR's website. And so, anyway, sorry about that. I was getting a phone call. The service provider list is our OIB providers. They now are able to provide, they were required to set a part of their budget aside to serve folks in the 18 to 54-year-old age range. So that's brand new. Our grant programs haven't ever allowed for folks younger than 55, simply because that's one of the qualifications for the OIB funding that comes from the Rehabilitation Services Administration, who awards Department of Rehab the money. So we've not been able to serve folks less than 55. So with the addition of the augmented dollars, we are able to offer services to folks who are a little younger. The legislation meant that we had to set up eligibility requirements because the legislation was to help folks who were not interested in seeking employment. So if someone has a DOR case open or they have current employment, they're not eligible for getting services. But for anybody who is particularly interested, I'm kind of coming back to something Laura said early on, just to say sometimes folks don't know what they need when they're diagnosed with a visual impairment or they begin that journey. Like myself, right? When I first became blind, I had no idea 14 months later I'd be totally blind. But when I landed there 14 months later, I mostly had no clue. I knew from a sort of life goal perspective that I eventually wanted to go back and work, but I didn't know where I needed to go or what I needed to do in order to make any of that happen. And so for many folks, there's a time when they need to focus on just sort of pulling things in their life together, making sure that they have the skills and abilities that they need to function and get around, make sure they can maintain their life. And whether or not they're interested in employment, this can be a great opportunity for folks. So I encourage all of you, if you know folks who might have gone to one of our programs in the past and only had very limited services available. Our providers were really excited to have this funding available to, help make it possible for them to do a little more for people who were less than 55. So, I don't want to take up too long. So, Sue, anything else you can think of that I should mention quickly? I want to leave time for questions too. So.
Yeah, no, I can't. Thank you, Jay. And I think Sarah's gonna take it to the audience at this point, correct?
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, we do have some hands. First, we have Margie. After Margie will be Deborah and then Frank. Go ahead,
Thank you,
Margie.
Desi. Hi, dynamic team. Wow, this is one of the best presentations I've heard in years, and all five of you are really outstanding. And Sue, you lead a good program.
Thank
Just,
you.
you bring in your own personal incredible history, and I have a few questions. So, some of you may know or may not. I 9, 10 months ago acquired a brain injury, and I have been going through and working this whole darn thing on my own, which is another form of rehab. It is just like losing your sight, acquiring a brain injury. And one of the things we do in the council is we every Friday morning, Nellie Emerson, who you guys are familiar with, she worked for DOR as a rehab counselor and a manager, and I come from the VA side as a rehab teacher and mid-level manager. And I've been associated with DOR for, I just counted out, 47 years. Either as a client or collaborating with clients when I work for the VA or on the back or something. Anyway, today we had a support group. One of our members relocated to Nevada. These are all older women. She's getting services through a program in Nevada, in Las Vegas. She's in a 6-week, 3-day-a-week program. She is thrilled. She's been so depressed for a couple of years. We've ran this support group through our Council on Aging and Vision Loss for 3.5 years now. We have two more women in this group who are in desperate need, and they can't go to OCB. And the resources to get a comprehensive rehab program, something less than mobility once every 5 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever their local agency calls for, is so desperately needed in this state. These are not people who are going to work. These are people we need to keep out of nursing homes. You all know the issues. And Jay, you know the issues. Your whole team knows the issues. Is this something that DOR will ever be able to take on the way it is currently structured? I know your rules come from RSA. I'm starting to think we need a commission, because I know the states where there's commissions, they offer adjustment to site loss services for people. So whoever wants to take that on, thank you. And thank you for your wonderful dynamic presentation.
I guess I'll take it first, and Jake, you may want to pipe in, but you're right, Margie, there is a need. We've seen it. Our funding does come from federal dollars, and we have real strict guidelines and regulations on how we can spend that money. Hopefully, some of the TBI programs out there and independent living programs can integrate. And at this point in time, I don't see anything with the DOR side because we are about work and employment, or the independent living groups. But somebody on this group may know something more or have something more to add.
I can add just a tad. I know that several of the of our CRPs provide adjustment to blindness classes, groups, through their nonprofit status. I know that Earl Baum, San Diego Center for the Blind, Society for the Blind, pretty much most of them that we work with have some form or another of that of adjustment to blindness. Now, when you get into the head injuries, that is a very desperate, it's a difficult, but we work with them. If somebody comes to us with a head injury and they want to go to work and they've got a vision loss, we'll take it on. But it is a difficult, it can be difficult because you're working, generally people do tend to, agencies do tend to compartmentalize, you know, the agencies that work with the visually impaired, you know, aren't always professional that with the head injuries and vice versa. So, and Jay might have.
Yeah, I'll add adjustment to vision loss is one of the core OIB services, and the services offered to our under 55 population, those who are 18 to 54, are potentially available from the OIB providers. It does differ, right? Like grants are interesting in that the provider gets to tell us what they think they can do with the money that we're offering. And so every program sets up their adjustment to vision loss service slightly differently. But I definitely would recommend, you know, see what's available through your local provider, because many of my programs do have, you know, counselors available. Not all of them have licensed counselors, but many of them also have peer support groups and many other things to address vision loss.
I'll address from a system level and from a department level, from an administration level. If you're seeing areas where we could improve a specific program, where you're seeing that, hey, there are gaps in the service, we have this population that's not being addressed, but if you made this small change, the population could be addressed. So when I was talking about our programs and how we might improve them, some of it is around fiscal performance, but the other piece is just general program improvement. So there are, I'm sure people know there are ways to address. I mean, there are things that can be done legislatively, or there may be other programs that people could take advantage of that might not be through DOR. There's been a really big focus over the past few years at our agency, CalHHS, California Department or California Health and Human Services Agency. There's a real focus on whole person care. I mean, we know that a large part of our business is around employment services and independent living. There are other entities in state government that focus on other aspects, food security or developmental disabilities and age-related services. It may be that if we don't have a service that directly addresses a population, we may be able to put a person in touch with the right entity that can provide service through another program. And then there's also, it doesn't really help for right now, but it's worthwhile to know that some of the efforts that I mentioned during my comments, it's about partnership among state departments, It's about sort of pooling our resources and making sure that people are not falling through the cracks to the extent that we can. And as we mentioned, you know, there is a need, and we have to work within the services that our programs can provide. But we're definitely interested in making sure that people are not falling through the cracks. So please engage with us, and we can have that conversation.
All right, next we have Deborah.
I wanted to put a couple things on DOR's radar. I'm so pleased you guys are doing a great job now of training rehab counselors in access technology and the needs of some of our students. But I wanted to talk about it, just a couple of gaps in training I've seen in rehab counselors recently. I work at a community college. I'm the alternate media specialist. And so I'm responsible for making sure that all of our print and impaired students have accessible textbooks, and also assisting them in how to use the computer and reading those. And I'm a paraprofessional, which means that I see students a lot when the professor is busy. What I've discovered lately is that a lot of rehab counselors are purchasing iPads for our blind and visually impaired students. Even though the student already has an iPhone and they don't really need an iPad, what they really need is a computer. And the reason they really need a computer is a lot of our courses now are hybrid, which means that they do a lot of their homework online, they take a lot of their tests online, even though they show up in the classroom. And what's happening is that our online, and in California, the community colleges have all adopted Canvas. And Canvas does not allow students to use an iPad to do their online labs or to take exams. And you will be kicked out of your exam if you're trying to do it with your iPad. So even if a student has a take-home exam, if they don't have a computer at home, and rehab has only bought them an iPad, it's not sufficient. And so we're running into that a lot. The other problem I'm seeing is just rehab counselors coming up with things that are just completely not true. And I'll give you one anecdotal example. I had a couple of students who were going to buy the print textbook for $150. And I said, no, 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 don't do that. Rent the online textbook for $30. You'll have to return it at the end of the quarter, but it is accessible. The $30 textbook is accessible. The $150 textbook is not. And the rehab counselor said, no, 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 you have to buy the printed book. We can't pay for a rented textbook. So I told the student, you know what, just spend your own money. Skip Starbucks, spend your own money, buy that. Just ignore the stupid counselor because they don't know what they're talking about. Because, I mean, by the way.
Well, you know, I'd really like to talk with you offline about that, but I want to address both of those concerns because I think I know which community college do you work for, Deborah?
De Anza.
That's the one in Sacramento area. Sorry, I'm not.
No,
yet.
No, it's in Cupertino. And okay. I'm not going to discuss a specific
case. No, no, no,
that's
no, no, no.
Rude.
But I want to.
I'm just using this as one anecdotal time when a student was getting information that was completely silly from a counselor.
Right. So, but let me address, because it is important that, I'm not asking you to address the specific counselor here. However, when people give me generalizations like that, then I can't address it. That
no,
becomes the
not.
Problem. So, but let me address the iPad. We have a significant problem with particularly the high school age. All they got in high school was iPads. So that's all they think they need. And so we get into this. This has been an ongoing thing. And I don't know if this was a situation here. It may or may not have been. One of the very few things in our district go to the full on fair hearing, but the ones that do, the most recent one didn't go all the way to the top, was about that very thing, because the individual wanted us to buy him an Apple computer. It said, look, the jobs that you're going to do, we did an extensive labor market survey. We're not going to buy you something you don't need and pay for training for something you don't need when you go to work, this is what you need. So what you're explaining is a similar issue coming up. And I totally agree with you. It's kind of an issue that sometimes people go in with what they want, and they'll go into an assessment. already saying what they want. And so that is one way we're trying to educate counselors. We can't educate counselors on every little aspect.
Of course.
But what I am trying to do is to get them to be inquisitive, to ask questions. Like, why? And if you have a question about this, then let's talk about it. Let's talk to your managers. I get it. iPads are cool. I have an iPad. But you know what? It doesn't do my job. And so you're absolutely right about that. Now, your second comment about renting the book, that is very, very frustrating. But the good thing is that there was, at one time, we did not have a mechanism to rent books. Long story, you know, DOR deals with regulations that are probably 100 years old. I don't know.
Of course.
That's what they feel like, right?
Of course.
So at one point, we did not have that mechanism. But now, with the CPC card that I was just talking mm-hmm. about that works like a credit card, that can be something that we put on the CPC card. The individual rents that book through the CPC card, and then the counts, you know, there's not an issue of what the mechanism is. So that again is something like, okay, yes, we need to get involved. We need to get into the 20th century, not alone the 21st century. And renting textbooks is the way things are to go. So again,
it's cheaper for you. And a lot of times they're more accessible.
Exactly. But you're right. There are counselors that have old tapes. It's really hard for them to change. But that's where people go, I don't want to throw that person under the bus. And honestly, what I try when I do, is, you know, I need to know names again, not on the call, but
of course not,
because if I don't know, you know, what'll happen is if I make an announcement saying, please remember people can rent books, it may or may not even get to that individual.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, with so much staff all over the state of California, sometimes those things get lost. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward.
May I share a final anecdote
and then
I will go on mute? And this did happen 4 years ago. Had a student who had been blind all his life, excellent Braille reader, but was losing his hearing. And we tried to get his rehab counselor to buy him a Braille display, but that never occurred. And then I discovered this wonderful program for the deafblind that's federally funded that buys Braille displays for people who have hearing loss. But it's too bad his counselor didn't know about that. And so I want to make sure that you guys are up on all these kinds of things. I mean, this man read Braille perfectly, but he was struggling to hear speech as his hearing got worse. And like I said, it was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully now your counselors will know about these federal programs that offer this free equipment if you have, you know, enough hearing loss and you have an audiogram that proves it. So I'm going to go back on mute now. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Debbie. Thank you, Debbie. Who do we have next, Debbie?
Okay, our next person is Frank. Go ahead, Frank.
I know that guy.
Right. I'm Frank Welty, and I am the president of the California Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, which is a special interest group that works on the issues of older Californians with vision loss. And specifically, I was interested in what you had to say about the OIB program. It sounds like you've got a lot of constraints that prevent you from perhaps doing as much as you would like in rehab services for older adults who aren't on a job track. I'd like to have a conversation with you to find out more about that, and also to find out more of where the pain points are from your perspective in terms of what prevents you from doing the kind of services you'd like to give, except for problems with regulations, because maybe you can't advocate, but we can. So I don't know if Sarah has your information or not, but I would definitely like to follow up and start a dialogue to work towards improving services for blind seniors, which are woefully inadequate.
Yeah, this is Jay Harris, and I would love to speak with you, Frank. I'm happy to give out my contact information. Sarah has it, and so you can ask for her, but it's all of our emails are fairly easy, I think. They're first and last name separated by a period. Typically, that's our usual setup. At dor.ca.gov. So I'm jay.harris, harris, at dor.ca.gov. I will clarify, because I hope I'm not giving out bad information. I'm actually really excited about the expansion of services that were in the process of doing. And I think what you may have picked up on is the differences. One of the most challenging parts of making presentations to statewide groups for me is that I've got 16 nonprofit partners who all do things differently. And so for many of our services, it can be challenging to know how to explain to a group, you know, this large, that what's going on at their individual local program may not be the case for the whole state. So I try to keep things pretty high level. But, you know, I would love to work to a point, you know, someday where we could say this, you know, service A and service B are available in this form all across the state. But I would love to talk with you. So thank you.
Yeah, we need to make that happen faster because lots of people are falling through the cracks.
I'm thank sorry to hear that. Yeah, get in touch.
You bet.
Desi, we have time for one more question.
All right, that will be Christy. Go ahead, Christy.
Fantastic. I know I just raised my hand again, so make sure you saw. So two things. First of all, well, three things. I really appreciate this presentation. I think it's been one of the better presentations, and I appreciate the teamwork. Secondly, I see a theme, and that is rehab counselors are not going out to the consumers, and sometimes consumers need rehab counselors to go out to the consumers. Also, people who are newly blinded, seniors. I am doing some of the counseling for Hearts for Sight, and my folks that I've been in contact with are in dire need of people going out to them. They are afraid to get out of their homes or cannot get out of their homes for various reasons, but need some of this training. So we really need the counselors to come to the clients, number one. And then my last thing is to Sue. You said that you're working with CDCR.
Yes.
When I was employed with the Department of State Hospitals, I had several blind folks that I worked with, mm-hmm. and I brought in Department of Rehabilitation services to them. But I really hope that DOR will come and work like you're working with CDCR, which I think is awesome. I will hope you will seek out the clients, the patients in the state hospitals that are either losing their vision or have blindness as one of their complications, you know, and being in there. Because some of them do get out and some of them do need those services and some of them will get jobs.
Yes, and some of them will just improve the quality of their lives now.
Yes, yes.
With some of those training. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
So Department Definitely. Of State Hospitals, please reach out. And if you have to bowl your way in, do it.
My team's all laughing. She can do it.
Good. Go for it. Thank you. Tell them Christy Creston sent you.
All right.
Oh, well, I really want to say that it has been a pleasure having you all here today. And I agree, this is one of the best presentations we have ever had. I love that, you know, it's very real. I love the stories because I think it's important that, you know, we have that connection. We've all, you know, lived our different experiences and all five of you have a different experience. Very, you know, I think the person most similar to mine would be Peter. You know, and I think it's neat because people get to see, you know, and hear that type of encouragement that, you know, we've all been there in some way, shape or form. So I really want to thank all of you on behalf of CCB and Gabe Griffith, our president. Thank you so much for coming today. And I invite you to stick around if you would like. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
been our
Thank
pleasure.
You, everybody.
All
Thank
right.
You. Thank you.
We'll be talking to you soon, Christy. Okay.
Uh-oh.